is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin hour number three. It is VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here, Circus Sports Fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Our closer back home from Omaha in Cleveland, Ohio, Jensen Lewis. Jensen, we always love catching up with our guy, Will Hill. Give him a follow on X at NotTheWillHill. Joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line, the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. It is a fantastic podcast. Will, how was Father's Day? Did you have a quiet one at the house, or how was it yesterday on Sunday?
It was good. Yeah, I just went out to an early dinner, I guess an early lunch. Then I hosted Live Bet Sunday with Dustin Sweetelson, watched the U.S. Open together, watched the baseball. And as soon as we got off the air, I mean, like, signed off, went downstairs, grabbed something out of the fridge, and my phone started blowing up. And it had to be, like, our show got done, like, 6:55 Eastern, maybe 7 o'clock Eastern. The tweet hits that Devers got traded, and we were just talking, you know, between the break here. I had to double check it. I thought it was hacked because I think it was Robert Murray who I saw tweeted. I know it was legit, but I was like, oh man, somebody got into his Twitter. Devers for Hicks and Harrison, some prospects. That can't be a real trade. Somebody's messing with this guy. And plus, they just swept the Yankees. Devers just hit another homer against the Yankees. Like, this is obviously something's up here. Somebody's messing around. It's not April Fool's, but something's going on. And then I just, by the time I searched like Jeff Passan or somebody else, I saw, I think Passan confirmed it. And I was floored like everybody else. Just absolutely shocking, shocking trade. It's not quite Luka Doncic level. I think that's the one that sets the barometer. That one's 10 out of 10, maybe even 11 or 12 out of 10. But that one's a 10 out of 10. This is not quite that, but this is still like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, just in terms of level of shockingness. And similar, and the more you read, and I'm not surprised by the return, you know, based on the return here, sounds like they didn't shop them, because if you in a league where nobody can hit, the league average is like 243 or something. Mm. Nobody can hit. He is not a good offensive player. He's a great offensive player. I understand, you know, some of the things in the locker room. They wanted a clear room for the young guys. He makes a lot of money, refuses to play first, refuses to play third. He's a bit of a diva. I get that. And they say, you know what? We got a young team. We don't want him around. I get some aspects of that. But at the end of the day, he's Rafael Devers. He's a tremendous, tremendous offensive player. He's a clutch offensive player. Just ask any Yankee fan what they think of Devers. I mean, he owns not just Cole, he owns the whole Yankee team. There's no way they shopped that player, and that was all they got. I know Hicks and Harrison, they're live young arms, but Hicks has been a disappointment, really. Mm-hmm. If you have a good team, Hicks is more of a bullpen piece. Harrison, we'll see. All right, some of these prospects, who knows? I was shocked at the move. I was shocked at the return and how little they got, and just still, I woke up this morning. Sometimes, you know, you wake up and the first thing you think of is like what happened the night before. And it's just, it's you almost like, wait, did that actually happen? Devers is on the San Francisco Giants. And not to make things weirder, the Giants and the Red Sox play this weekend coming up Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it would have been even more awkward if it was in Fenway. But man, it's going to be strange to see him in that San Francisco Giant uniform.
It will. And Will, the man who got the greatest Father's Day present of all yesterday was Gerrit Cole, knowing that Rafi Devers is no longer in the American League East. Let's just kind of stay there for a second, because, you know, where the Yankees were coming off getting swept to where they are now, the Rays have played better. The Blue Jays have been better. Do we still have enough confidence in the Yankees that this is their division to lose? And more importantly now, do we feel the Red Sox become even bigger sellers at the deadline? Just knowing Bregman's still coming back from injury, they got to figure out if they can get him signed long-term because he has the opt-out after this year. All of a sudden, this has turned to 180 in a big way, and potentially the beneficiaries here are the Yankees, even though they got swept over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, if you would have asked any Yankee fan on Friday, hey, you're going to get swept by the Red Sox, but the Red Sox after the game on Sunday are going to trade Devers, you would have, you know, pulled a hamstring going to sign up for that deal. He has terrorized the Yankees that much. That was the concern, not even from a Yankees perspective, because look, it's 162 games. They scored 4 runs in the 3 games. They didn't hit. It happens over 162. The concern was that maybe you got Boston going and gave Boston a little pep rally and you put a little wind in their sails. Well, trading Devers, I think, takes care of that. I don't know if they're going to further anger their fan base and start trading more pieces. They're a game over 500. American League is very mediocre. So I think the Yankees are still in good shape. You know, $5 favorites, a little north of that, to win the division. I think, you know, I just don't know that Tampa, Toronto have enough to get to like the 94, 95 wins it's probably going to take to win the division. So I think the Yankees probably in good shape to win the division. Remember this time last year, they hit a pretty prolonged slump before they eventually snapped out of it. We'll see what Boston does. The team I'm looking at in the American League, Baltimore is 10-1 to make the playoffs. Oh. They're still 10 games under, but they're only six out of a wild card. There's 92 games left. They can hit. Charlie Morton is starting to look like the pitcher, you know, he's been in the past, where he's really gotten on track the last month or so. Sagano's been okay. If they can get one or two more arms either back off the injured list, and they got plenty of these guys that are on the injured list, Grayson Rodriguez, Bradish, Tyler Wells. I mean, you just go down the line. They got Suarez. They got a million pitchers injured. One or two of them back, maybe one or two via trade. That's a playoff-worthy lineup. In the American League, that's pretty mediocre. 10-1 to make the playoffs, I don't think is the worst bet on Baltimore.
Who saw this coming from the boys in Charm City? I certainly thought they were dead in the water. They are not all of a sudden with that weekend sweep. All right, let's get to it. Game five tonight, and I'm a little bit surprised that OKC is almost double-digit favorites in this one tonight against Indiana. We have a suppressed total, at least by their standards, at 225. I'm seeing it down to 224 now here at Circa. And you can still get Indiana about plus 375 to win the NBA title. Is this series over now that they couldn't close out game four back home in Indiana?
Man, I'm so terrified to declare this Indiana team down and out. I'm afraid to underrate them, disrespect them, but that was a very concerning missed opportunity Friday night. I like OKC tonight. I do think the line's probably a little cheap. And boy, what a horrible beat that was on the Pacers Friday night. If you're getting the six and a half, not only are you covering most of the game, you're leading outright most of the game. And you look up at the free throw fest at the end, Mathurin, everything. Next thing you know, it lands on seven. And I think it was Halliburton who just chucked, you know, basically a half court three when he could have just gone in for an uncontested layup to cover it. That being said, I just think, look, the game one was 10.5. Game two was 11.5. This is the cheapest OKC's been at home. The fact that Indy couldn't close him out in game four, up 10, I think it was 85-75 in the fourth quarter. I meant 95-85. It was a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, similar to how OKC was down in Denver, 2-1, down 8 in the fourth quarter. The fact that they got off the mat, the 5 points in two possessions by SGA, I just think that, man, anytime you're the lower seed, the lesser team, the underdog, and you have a chance to knock out the favorite. And that, look, being up 3-1, I don't think that would have been a knockout punch. OKC would have still had a shot. But the fact that it's 2-2, I just felt like OKC wrestled away this series. And plus the fact OKC shot 3-17 from three and still won. I know they made up for it a little bit with the free throws. And I think too much was made of the refs. The free throws were about even. The fouls were about even. Both teams committed a lot of fouls, shot a lot of free throws. But I didn't think it was egregious one way or another in terms of the calls. I know there was a missed call on SGA at the end. But I think SGA and the Thunder dominate this game. I think the fact look, their offense has got to get back on track. 3-17, this modern day NBA, 17 threes is not enough attempts. Three is not enough makes, but they'll shoot better at home. They'll play better at home. And I just feel like that Friday was a missed opportunity that Indiana is going to regret for a long time. So again, very concerned about fading this Indiana team and disrespecting them. They seem to be, I think it was Bill Simmons who made the point. They're Michael Myers. You shoot them, you take a chainsaw and you look up, you think you kill them and they're staggering and they're still chasing you somehow. It's just, it's amazing what they've been able to do. But I think OKC wins this one and wins it going away.
Yeah, Will, I was sitting with JVT and Mitch in Omaha, and we were just bewildered. And again, I had bought down to OKC minus 4.5. And I was sitting there in the final possession. I'm looking at JVT like, you watch. This is going to be a circus. So absolutely bad beat if you had the Pacers for sure. And finally, put a bow on this. Any player props that stand out to you? Anything that we could target from those angles and that stands out to you in this matchup?
Turner's a guy I'm looking at just because he's been so bad. The three-point shot has not been there. I think he's at 20.5 points, rebounds, assists. I would maybe look towards an under there. The Pacers have so many different guys they can throw at you. Will they limit his minutes or do they just ride with him and say, you know what, we're going to need you to win. We're going to need you to get back on track. We're going to just go with you. So Turner under would be one I would look at. You know, Wiggins has had big moments in this series for OKC. He's been a little quiet the last two games, but he hit 5 of 8 from three. I think it was in game number two. So being back at home, could you look at like a ladder for Wiggins for threes and get some fat prices on that? That wouldn't be a bad way to go. And again, I think if you're OKC, Dagnall's a smart coach. If I'm realizing it, if I'm seeing it, I'm sure he will too. 3-17 from three is just not going to cut it. You need more attempts. You need more makes. Wiggins can get you that. So Wiggins looking at his 3-point numbers might be an interesting way to look at it too.
So you're looking to the OKC side and laying the number here at 9.5. That total that we mentioned here, and again, somehow that under did hit in game four with that lack of score. I think it's 31-17 is what OKC outscored Indiana in that fourth quarter. 224. Is that getting a little bit too low? I know it's the critical game five, and this is going to ultimately decide the series, as history shows. Can we look to an over here? Do you think that defense of OKC stifles that Pacer offense?
Yeah, they played some incredible defense down the stretch. They really did. They, man, one for all the talk about the refs, Indy scored 1 point in the final 320. That was some really physical defense by OKC. I'd probably look towards an over just because, again, back to the three-pointers, I think they'll have more attempts. I think they'll have more makes. And I was doing the show Friday night with Humans where this game was in the first quarter. The live total was like 241.
Wow.
And Humans was on an under. And we were like, man, uh-oh, this ticket's in some trouble. And he stayed under and stayed under pretty comfortably. So haven't bet the total yet in this series. If I had to bet it, I'd bet the over just because I think we're going to get more threes in terms of the makes, in terms of the attempts. But not sure I like it enough to play it.
Any words for Victor Hovland this morning? I had a 54-1 ticket on Victor to win the U.S. Open.
I tweeted Friday. I said, I feel bad for Victor Hovland. The poor guy doesn't even know I have money on him, and thus he has no chance. But that was crazy. Again, doing the show yesterday, the live bet show, we're just updating the odds. The first three, four, five, six guys, these guys moving around, Ortiz, Hatton, Hovland, Burns, Scott, the numbers bouncing around. Spawn wasn't even on the radar. And then again, we get done with the show, and he's like right up at the top again. So it was very weird, the trajectory of Spawn to be right in the mix after one, two, three, disappear in the fourth round. And then all of a sudden, he's right there and he wins the damn thing.
I can't believe it as well. Check it out. I Should Have Bet More podcast, The Great Will Hill at Not The Will Hill on X. More U.S. Open talk next here at VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Enjoyed that conversation with Will Hill in the last segment, breaking down game five of the NBA Finals tonight. Gonna have Rachel Dorey join us in the next segment. Take a look ahead to game number six in the Stanley Cup Finals tomorrow night down there in Sunrise, Florida. But you know, I asked Will at the end there, any words for Victor Hovland this morning? If you had a ticket like I did and Will did on Victor Hovland, I had a 54-1 on Vic. And you know, I'm watching that final round. And again, no disrespect to JJ Spawn at all. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. All due respect to JJ Spawn this morning for going birdie finish at the U.S. Open, joining some elite names in the history of the game to win the United States Open a day ago. But I kept watching that thinking, Victor Hovland's going to win this. Like, Victor Hovland's the class player up there. If it's not going to be Adam Scott, who obviously really had a rough day yesterday, that's 79. Sam Burns had that water ball in 15 that kind of took him out of the mix. I kept waiting for Victor Hovland to happen, and it didn't happen. So to the victor go the spoils, pun intended for Victor Hovland. So let's hear from our new United States Open champion, JJ Spawn, on that putt, 64-footer, and what he was thinking about, and has it all really settled in yet, what he's accomplished?
Just to finish it off like that is just a dream. I mean, you watch other people do it. You see, you know, the Tiger chip, you see Nick Taylor's putt, you see, you know, crazy moments. And to have my own moment like that at this championship is, I'll never forget this moment for the rest of my life.
Has daughters there, his wife, of course, was there. They're all celebrating, the caddies, the coaches. It was quite the show. When J.J. Spawn rolled in that casual 64-foot bomb to put an exclamation point on this win at Oakmont. And very quickly, Jensen, this is kind of why I know I love sports. I think we love sports, to see kind of these stories that you don't see coming in real time. We just talked about it with Will Hill, who's doing Live Bet Sunday. Not that he's off the board, but they're not even looking at J.J. Spawn midway through this round because he's like an afterthought. And yet, you know, we're talking about all these other guys, and yet it's JJ to be the last guy standing. I'll admit, guilty as charged. Never saw this coming, even as I'm watching every single shot unfold on the back stretch down here at Oakmont. It is really one of those more rags to riches stories that I can think of in professional golf.
You and I were here day of the playoff of the players. And, you know, we looked at it and said, okay, here you go, head to head. And it was, once it was completed, we were like, I can't trust JJ Spahn for a while in this spot. Can't do it. And here, boy, you get just the full swing of the pendulum. And now that JJ has this in his back pocket, he knows how to battle through and he knows that he can do it. You know, we say a lot in basketball, shooters sometimes just got to see the ball go through the hoop to have that confidence mentally. Well, I think he has it now. Fast forward, Dave, to the Travelers coming up here. Mm. He's right back in that 50-1, you know, long shot spot for a guy that just won the United States Open. Now, I think you said it accurately for people just joining us. Like, okay, we go from there's only one guy that's under par for the tournament to we're going to have a million guys that are probably 12, 13 under par headed up here to Cromwell, Connecticut. So, boy, what a difference a week makes. But I think first and foremost, JJ now not only proven to himself he can do it on the biggest of stages, but potentially for Captain America and Keegan Bradley looking forward, that's pretty big news for the Ryder Cup in September.
Yeah, he's probably going to qualify just on points alone. But, I mean, you nailed it there, Jensen. Like, to be in the playoff at the Players' Championship with Rory and then to win a U.S. Open, I mean, there was one more revolution of a golf ball at the Players, and he wins that as well. So maybe in the marketplace, we have to start reevaluating who J.J. Spahn is. Who is Rory McIlroy? So full credit to Rory. He did speak yesterday after the round, spoke on Saturday as well. That was a little bit more chippy. We'll get to that in a second. But he did make the cut by birdieing 18 on Friday, which, you know, he could have mailed that in. And he did play much better golf yesterday. And I know he wasn't in contention, finished a 6-over par. So, you know, a ways back as we get ready for Port Rush, the final major of the year, coming up next month over there in his birthplace. I mean, in Northern Ireland, it's going to be a Rory fest over there. But he just still seems off. This was Rory talking to the media, and again, his responsibilities and to why he hasn't been talking to the media as of late.
No, not really. It's more a frustration with you guys.
But yeah.
I'm just... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been totally available for the last few years, and I'm not saying maybe not you guys, but maybe more just the whole thing.
The whole driver thing.
I mean, that was a part of it. That was a part of it. But it's not as if, like, at Augusta I skipped you guys on Thursday, so it's not as if it's not out of the ordinary. I've done it before. I'm just doing it a little more often. I feel like I've earned the right to do whatever I want to do. Yeah.
I feel like I've earned the right to do whatever I want. That is true. But it comes across as a petulant child. It comes across as a guy who takes the ball and wants to go home when things don't go his way. I don't know why he's developed this posture with the media.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is it translates to fans. And by the way, in the betting market, you know, we talked about this, you know, the full fate of Rory has been on for me for quite some, this goes back, by the way, this isn't this week. This goes back to LACC and Pinehurst last year when he doesn't win at Pinehurst and loses the U.S. Open to Bryson DeChambeau. That's a year old now where he skips out. So, like, look, he's the second betting choice this week. I just saw he's actually been updated from 12-1 to 11-1. He did play better. He's the second betting choice this week. He will be on the short list next month at Port Rush. We get that. But when you hear that, it's like, I don't know, as an elite athlete like you were, Jensen, if you're not there mentally or something is, whatever it might be, that's eating at you, it could have nothing to do with golf. Can we back a guy like Rory with all that immense talent, probably the most talented golfer that I can recall since the Tiger Woods era? I think he's more talented than Scotty, if we're being honest about it. Can we back him with this type of posture that he's taking for whatever reason?
Well, first of all, he's wrong saying that he's been available the whole time. He hasn't. And, you know, even with some of the biggest controversies here as of late, he's been a ghost. And so he's going to own that for a while. You're asking for a larger target on your back the way you've handled it. Mm. It's not the media's fault that you're plus a million at the U.S. Open. That's all on you, pal. And you've only added to the stress now moving forward for the British Open. Don't think for a moment that there isn't going to be, if he thought there was scrutiny before,
oh boy,
just wait, pal. You're about to get a monsoon of coverage and it's not going to be good. So you better have your game together or this is going to blow up in your face even worse. As far as betting and moving forward, yes, from a value standpoint, it would be there. But here we are, Dave. Now we have to factor in that he's worried about other things instead of his game, namely the media and having to, you know, answer questions. Or in his case, I can do whatever I want. I've earned the right for that. I won't be betting him anytime soon, whether it's American dollars or international dollars or euros or whatever. Yeah, he's on the banned list for me for a little bit. And it's his own doing, man. Self-inflicted wounds. He did it to himself.
And we saw it too, right? We did see it that the numbers here, he started to drop like a rock, you know, because he was a second betting choice this time last week. Before you get to the U.S. Open. And then those numbers really started to drift. He is the second betting choice next month at Port Rush, plus 650. Scotty is the betting favorite at plus 450. So fascinating. And by the way, his on the Golf Channel, Paul McGinley, they did an amazing job. Paul, who's very close with Rory, said after the sound that we just played for you here, Jensen, he said, this isn't normal. This is not Rory. And when you hear that from a guy like McGinley, who's in his camp, if you will, say that this is not normal, that something else is amiss. Just know that going in. If you want to back Rory this week at 11-1 at the Travelers, I understand it because you're feeling that's a really good numbers at a place he should eat up. Just know mentally that's where he is. And I have to think that's part of the reason why we saw the adjustment in the number, or at least the drift on Rory before he teed it up on Thursday, because this is not normal. Whatever is going on there, I hope everything's fine at the home front, but that is not normal behavior right now. But that's what we're seeing from Rory McIlroy. So again, Scotty Scheffler is still the betting favorite next month. John Rahm is the third betting choice at 14-1. All the usual suspects that you would expect up there in the short end of the board. If you want to look at JJ at the British Open, 65-1. I don't know that... It might need to be a little bit longer still. It's terrible, terrible for me to say that, but I still feel like I don't know that I could play that number. All right, when we come back, we'll get to our best bets and also much more in this Rafael Devers trade that really seemed like it came out of left field. We'll discuss that next here. It's VSiN by the Books.
Tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here. We'll get to more Rafael Devers and that intrigue and some kind of maybe some updates there and our best bets in the next segment. But we always love talking with Rachel Dorey here as we get ready for game number 6 in the Stanley Cup Finals. That's going to be tomorrow night down in Sunrise, Florida. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line, CTO of Betalytics. Give her a follow on X as I do at Rachel Dorey. Rachel, first of all, before we get to game 6 tomorrow night, what in the hell happened over the weekend up there in game 5 in Edmonton on Saturday? I was expecting this big Edmonton, we steal game 4, it's going to be ours. And they just laid that golden egg out there on Saturday night. What happened to Edmonton in game 5?
Yeah, they just it's really tough to explain final Saturday of the season. And Saturday hockey is big in Canada. It's like Sunday football in the United States. Like you don't mess with it. And the fact that the Canadian team laid the egg is not great. The atmosphere in Edmonton was incredible, so that's certainly not an excuse. Quite frankly, like, I would not have gone with Calvin Pickard in goal. Like, I guess Stuart Skinner didn't play well in game 4, but honestly, like, Stuart Skinner's record in games 4 through 7 is unassailable, and to go to your backup and a guy that really has no business playing in a Stanley Cup final is probably not a decision I would have made. I think you have to go back to Stuart Skinner. I don't think Pickard gives you enough of a chance. I think you have to... Stuart Skinner is your starting goaltender. And if he's not, then Stan Bowman needs to be fired, because we've talked ad nauseum about how the Oilers need somebody who can take the buck and really be a good starting goaltender. So I kind of look at this as a comedy of errors. I would not have sat Kasperi Kapanen for Victor Arvidsson. Kapanen gives them an element of speed that allows them to be in on the forecheck to hound the Florida D, and Arvidsson just doesn't do that. So there were a couple coaching decisions that I would not have made. One thing I will point out, though, is the year Sidney Crosby won his first Stanley Cup, he had lost in the final the year before, and in game five, his team got blown out 5-0. And Pittsburgh went on to win games 6 and 7 in low scoring affairs. I'm not going to say that is going to happen here, but I think it's a pretty interesting parallel that a lot of these like generational talents kind of have similar paths. And would I be surprised to see Connor McDavid lead his team there? No, I wouldn't. But the difference being is the Penguins had Marc-Andre Fleury in net and the Edmonton Oilers have, I don't know who.
I think that's probably the intriguing handicap here, too. When you look at where Florida and Rach, credit where it's due, you said who wins game five will win the cup. And, you know, whether that does happen here in Sunrise or we get to the game seven, and you said it as well, it's going to be a long series and we're going to have that. To me, I find it so fascinating that Florida, in all intents and purposes, could have ended this thing in five if they hadn't blown a couple of 3-goal leads in this series. So to me, it just feels like they have had the upper hand. They've had the leverage. How do they just go about this and say, we know we're here, we're on the doorstep, let's just continue to impose our will, force Edmonton to make the mistakes that they have already? Like, do you change anything if you're Florida, or you just, let's roll it out there, fellas, because we know we're the better team?
Yeah, I think you kind of have to. I mean, at this point, it's June the 16th. Like, it's not exactly a hot take to say that the best team the Panthers have played is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, we're talking about a series that was a lot closer than this. And then you're looking at this, like you pointed out, Jensen, like, we're talking about this could have been a 5-game series had it not been for some blown leads. And so I look at Florida, and not only, obviously, you do not want to have those blown leads, but I look at how Florida plays. They kept Edmonton under 25 shots last game. If you are stamping out the Edmonton offense, you are going to have success. And so the Panthers are pounding the D, causing turnovers, causing like just absolute chaos in the Oilers' end with their physical play on the defenseman, whether it's punching them in the face after the whistle, Sam Bennett doing Sam Bennett nonsense. There's been less goalie stuff, and I think the league kind of basically said, hey, be careful because we will come down on you if you continue to do this. I think when you look at this, you're Florida, you're pretty happy with where you are. Continue to get in there and be physical on the defense, continue to disrupt the Edmonton breakout, and continue to kind of limit the high danger scoring opportunities. You've got to stay out of the box though, because eventually that is going to bite you. And so, I mean, if I'm going into game six, I'm saying we keep everything the same, but we've got to stay out of the penalty box here because we do not need to give the Oilers any reason to get that power play fired up. Cause when they do not lose. And so I look at this and I go, yeah, if I'm Florida, I kind of keep the same game plan. You're playing on the edge, but you're not going over. And you're playing to your strengths because there's no team in the NHL that's better at flipping that playoff hockey style switch than the Florida Panthers, right? They finished third in the division in large part because Matthew Tkachuk and Sasha Barkov missed a huge amount of time with injuries in the regular season. But there was not a soul in the NHL that said, yeah, Florida's not the best team in the Eastern Conference. Like, that was a foregone conclusion. And part of that reason is because they have guys who maybe they're not the superstars like McDavid and Dreisaitl, but when it comes to the playoffs, they're absolute dogs. Sam Bennett has more goals in this playoff run than Mitch Marner has in his entire career.
Whoa.
So you want to talk about learning how to play in the playoffs? The Panthers know how to do it, so I'd stick with what they're doing.
Speaking of Sam Bennett, he's now over a $2 betting favorite to win the Conn Smythe. What really grabbed my attention, Rach, is if you believe somehow that Edmonton can repeat the history that Sidney Crosby did with the Penguins that you alluded to, Dreisaitl is actually the betting favorite for Conn Smythe over Connor McDavid. He's 8-1 and Connor is 9-1. 9-1 on Connor McDavid. Are either one of those worth plays instead of just playing Edmonton in game six if you really think the Oilers can still win the cup?
I love seeing this board because before game one, I took Brad Marchand at 65-1.
Oh, wow.
And I haven't checked the cash out value to that. I probably should do that.
Should you?
Quite honestly, quite honestly, Dave, I think Leon Draisaitl probably should win the Conn Smythe regardless of who wins the cup. Because quite frankly, if you have two overtime winners in the Stanley Cup final and four overtime winners over the span of a playoff like campaign, and you're leading the playoffs in scoring or one of the top two, you are the most valuable player in the playoffs. Sam Bennett's value is that he injures people. Leon Draisaitl's value is that he literally wins games. So to me, I look at this and I go, number one, I'm pretty sure Bennett's agent is in every media member's ear, and I'm almost positive that's true because I'm on the email list. Number two, when you look at, I'm not even joking, like when you look at Draisaitl, four overtime winners over the span of a playoff career is incredible. Over the span of 2 months is outrageous. So you, I honestly, like, I took Draisaitl when he was plus 700. The fact that he's plus 800 here, I would not rule out Edmonton winning, even though I do think Florida's going to win. And it's extremely difficult to make the argument to somebody like me who watches with the level of depth and care that I do to say that you'd rather have Sam Bennett than Leon Draisaitl. I'll take the guy that scores two overtime winners in the cup final any day of the week. And the guy that plays probably 30% more minutes than Draisaitl, the guy that penalty kills. And yeah, you know what? Bennett might have 15 goals. That's great. A lot of them aren't game winners. So I look at that and I go, that seems more narrative to me than anything else. And if the Oilers win game six, you watch Leon Draisaitl is going to go right to the top of that board.
All right. Last one for me, Rach. A beautiful physics and a humidor lesson, if you will, about the good ice versus bad ice. The last time we had you, we head back to Sunrise. Humidity's high. What do we do from a player prop standpoint in your mind? Any other additional ways you'd love to attack this game?
I think you have to attack Bobrovsky's saves here. Like, yes, Florida's going to try and lock it down, but Edmonton's backs are against the wall. You don't really have a choice here. You have to think that they're going to funnel everything to the net. So I'd be attacking Bobrovsky's saves. I'd be attacking Bouchard's shots. I'd be attacking Draisaitl. I'd be attacking McDavid, all of the big guys. But there's two guys that I think present some significant value here, and that's Connor Brown and Corey Perry. Corey Perry has been excellent in his second line role, and Connor Brown looked fantastic on the first line. Both are hitting two shots with extreme consistency, and they're not paying the same juice because I think a lot of people aren't necessarily paying attention to that. So I would definitely attack those guys. The other thing I'm going to point out is the first period over 1.5 has hit in all five games. I'd probably stay away from that in game six, because I think once it becomes an elimination game, there's a little bit more tentativeness. I would take the second period over instead.
Rachel, I just wish you were more passionate about the cup.
There's very few things I'm more passionate about than the Stanley Cup. The World Cup is probably the only thing.
Wow. Didn't see that coming. Didn't have that on my bingo card.
And Rafi Devers leaving the American League.
Yeah, that
one
get you fired up a little bit, too.
Yes, get out.
We'll talk about that when we come back. Rach, appreciate it. Enjoy Game 6. Hopefully, we'll see if there's going to be a Game 7. We're not quite sure. But everybody, give her a follow at Rachel Dury on X. Does a great job with Betalytics. Let's talk more about Devers on the move and get to our best bets. That's next here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis. Great conversation with Rachel Dory, getting ready for Game 6. Tomorrow night down there in Florida, we'll get to Game 5 in the NBA Finals tonight here as we break down our best bets. Of course, those are brought to us by GBank, the official bank of VSiN. And they do include a play tonight. And obviously, the big news in Major League Baseball overnight, not just Shohei Ohtani is going to be on the bump tonight. He's going to make his pitching return here since August 2023. But it's the Rafael Devers trade. And now that he goes from Boston to San Francisco. And Buster Posey, this came to us from Alec Pavlovich over there at NBC. And he said that basically Buster Posey had said they've been talking about this move for a few weeks. And the quote from Buster Posey here, Jensen, is the bat is so special. It's really hard to acquire that type of talent at this point of the career. It felt like this was a chance to take a shot. What do you make of Posey looking at Devers and saying, not just this year, but he mentioned the career of his career, that this is a long-term play to go get Rafael Devers out of Boston?
Yeah, so the long-term idea, remember, you know, the Giants, the last handful of seasons have been involved in the two biggest free agents, right? Aaron Judge, they miss out on, and Shohei Ohtani, they were not able to land. So Willie Adames, Matt Chapman, the last couple of years have been their pivots, and it's still been, you know, kind of a team where you're looking like, can we take them seriously? Now, the pitching has been a lot better. Back into the bullpen, a huge reason why they are in the fight this year. But Dave, let me expand it out and why I think Buster Posey is onto something here. Okay, now when you add Rafi Devers in, and for a bigger market club like San Francisco, it's a very affordable number, not only to the total payroll, but also within the luxury tax, potentially for them to add resources moving forward, okay? So they take on the full amount. Just for conversational purposes, they have Devers, Adames, Matt Chapman, Robbie Ray, Jung-Hoo Lee, Logan Webb, already under contract for next year and beyond because they're on multi-year deals. But that adjusted payroll, okay, with the luxury tax and everything and cash and everything in there, is about $142 million. So to stay under the first tax threshold, the first luxury tax threshold, they've got about $80 million. Ooh. All right, so they're going to have some flexibility here to be able to do some things substantially. And I think overall for the landscape moving forward, they knew if they want to contend with the Dodgers, who are printing money with Ohtani, and the Padres, and now we'll kind of see, you know, moving forward what the ownership wants to do. AJ Preller has been super aggressive, so anxious to see all of that play out. But this is a win now move, and I'm very happy for Buster Posey to continue to stick to his guns. He was aggressive early in his tenure. He continues to do it here for the Giants and their potential in 2025.
And Jensen, you think there actually might be an actionable spot tonight with the Red Sox, that the big charter, and you trade Rafi Devers on the plane last night. Now you're in Seattle tonight against Logan Gilbert. Lucas Giolito's on the bump here for the Sox. Sizable underdogs here, plus $1.57. But you've been involved in this before, and you know what it's like when you trade a star and then you got to go play a game that next day. What do you think the impact is maybe from a tangible spot here in the Sox tonight?
Yeah, I think if you're looking at it overall, you know, you just the unknown certainly of Logan Gilbert coming back off the IL. I understand why the total is where it is at 7. Bigger ballpark there at T-Mobile. Giolito, again, still waiting to kind of see what he puts out there. The run line, I think, could be something you look at. If you're a Red Sox backer tonight, I don't know if I'd go as far as the money line, just because you don't know what Gilbert is going to look like, A, and B, what the leash would be. Thinking about their lineup moving forward, though, if they're done making these blockbuster moves as far as selling goes, here's a potential lineup. So Duran stays in your leadoff spot. When Bregman comes back, you slide him now up to the two spot. Carlos Narvaez has actually been really good for them behind the plate, not only defensively, but offensively. Roman Anthony, Abraham Toro, Trevor Story, Willier Abreu, Marcelo Meyer, and Zidane Rafaela. That is still a great lineup. It's still good. Is it now stratospheric like it could be with Bregman and Devers, you know, back to back? Probably not. But if you get Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer, I mean, still waiting for Christian Campbell here to have kind of that super breakout stretch. Hey, man, it's still there for the taking. And I told you this goes back to what we thought about the American League to start the year.
Yeah,
it is still super wide open. Like you look at the record and yes, you know, right around 500 here for the Red Sox. It's still right there, man. Anxious to see what they do here in the next couple of weeks.
Plus at $1.70, if you think the Sox, a game over 500 now, can make the postseason, even though Rafael Devers is going to be in San Francisco. Very quickly, we mentioned Shohei Ohtani back in the bump tonight, first time since August of 2023. They're sizable favorites here, $1.57 against Dylan Cease and the Padres. Is this a stay-away spot for you tonight? It's come down a little bit now to $1.45 on the Dodgers.
Yeah, a total of 9 and anxious, I should say, intrigued to say 59% of the bets, 65% of the handle, Dave, on the under. And just knowing that you have Cease, obviously has had his success there in starts. Don't know the leash yet here for Shohei Ohtani. So what they were looking at is a bullpen game already. How long do you let Ohtani go? And perhaps it's an inning by inning thing here. But yeah, it'll be a stay away spot, more of a learning spot, a little recon spot, if you will, both here in Seattle and in LA for two aces coming back that you would hope will be very impactful in the months to come.
Recon spot. Feel like I'm suiting up again back in my Marine Corps days. Jensen, let's talk very quickly. Game five tonight in OKC. Had Will Hill on earlier this hour. He does think it's a fair number on the OKC side here, weighing the 9.5 and maybe looking to an over for Will at 224 as that number has come down. What are your leans here? And again, for Visa Pro subscribers, those official plays will come later in the day.
It was the under, and I know this is kind of ping pong since we've been on the show here. It was at 225 at circa, down to 224.
Right.
DraftKings, ironically, was at 224. They're up to 225, so I don't think the market can figure it out just yet. We'll probably stay away for the moment, kind of see where the money comes in later this afternoon.
I like it. So, again, and still think Indiana can win this series, by the way, plus 375. To win the NBA championship, knotted up at two. Normally you don't get those type of prices. Very quickly, I know you've got some plays here in the College World Series, but you wanted to get to something with the with what's going on with Coastal's, with their skipper. What's going on there, Jensen?
All right, so for people that are not initiated from this part of the country, there is a certain way you pronounce Coastal Carolina's mascot. I give you Coastal Carolina head coach, Kevin Schnall.
Everybody say it with me. Chanticleers. Chanticleers. Not Chanticleers. Chanticleers.
Oh, my.
They've only won 25 games in a row. They've only won 25 in a row. They and UCLA are the two teams that are undefeated still alive in the entirety of the NCAA tournament. Remember this, Dave. Coastal swept through not only their regional, but the super regional in Auburn. UCLA swept through the regional and their regional super regional out there in Southern California. It's hysterical. Chanticleers. I know you're from this region of the country, Dave, so you know it very well. But boy, what another convincing win for Coastal Carolina. They are into the 2-0 spot after the win yesterday. Two big ones tonight here. Here are the plays. So Arkansas, Murray State, an elimination game. UCLA, LSU in the 1-0 winner's bracket game. Do like the under 9.5. That is still available out at DraftKings. Shop around for your best price. Do think the pitching does find its way back here, but very anxious to see how the media moving forward takes the cue from Kevin Schnall and Cup. They've won 25 in a row. Get my team name right, for goodness sake.
By the way, like I always say on X or social media in general, the fake outrage is everywhere. That was real. Like that wasn't
that was good.
Right? Like he's like, people
like that.
Know how to say our team name. Chanticleers, say second betting choice right now to win the College World Series. You've been all over that since the inception of it. By the way, you've got a great deal right now, a $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bank, and VEASAN. All you got to do is open up a GBank Visa Signature credit card. In the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger that $500 trifecta. Then you're going to receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. VEASAN will complete the trifecta with a free VEASAN Pro subscription through October 31st. That, in and of itself, is a $200 value. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bank, First Bet, and VEASAN. Head over to VEASAN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This is a one-time promotion. It's limited to customers opening up a new account. In response to this very offer, it will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. Jensen, great stuff. Great to have you back in Cleveland, Ohio, after your experience there in Omaha. Coming up next here, it is a numbers game. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. They are next here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.